Song is called Victory in Jesus, done for us by Selah. And before that, Mary Catherine, Steve Bell together, and unto the least of these. 11 and a half minutes after the hour, it's a Tuesday morning, and we're pleased to have with us Dr. Don Clark. Don, a biochemist and member of the Board of Creation Moments. And for the last couple of days, Don has been sleeping in Seattle. And he's returned to it. You were sleeping in Seattle, weren't you?
I slept one night. Okay. Yes, right. It was.
I think they made a movie about that one time.
Brief.
Which we're making movie references today because of Gene Wilder.
Yeah. Well, I don't think he was in that movie though, was he?
No, he wasn't in the movie, but it's a movie.
Sleepless with Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan, right? Hanks.
Meg Ryan. Mm,
okay, that's a good movie, as I recall. Eons ago, I saw that. And Don, you travel a lot. I mean, you've been to Russia, you've been to Cuba, and you travel the U.S. working for different ministries. What's the group in Seattle that you were working with?
Well, it's Orphan Relief and Rescue, and they have a ministry in Liberia and Benin, West Africa. Mm-hmm. And they had been helping, they've probably been in existence since 2007, and it's a group that I helped administratively wise start the organization. Uh-huh. And so I've been kind of with them since that time. I'm the chairman of the board and also the chief financial officer for the organization. But they help orphans in Liberia and have done everything from doing some construction helping with construction of orphanages or classrooms for the kids, to feeding programs, to now they're very actively working in Benin, where they're helping to stop child trafficking.
Yeah.
And so some of the villages, not some, many of the villages that are really extremely poor, if they have at least one kid, they'll traffic out or they'll sell. They don't call it selling, but they kind of lend their kids to these traffickers. And they'll go and put them in either child labor or in the sex trade. And the child may come back after a year or so with a little bit of money, or they may not. And so Orphan Relief and Rescue has gone in and basically said, hey, you know, this is wrong. We'll help you. Keep your child in school. We'll help with a little microfinance, and so that you don't have to sell your child and don't have to make money this way. And so we've done that. About 254 kids have been saved so far, and it's transforming the village, because the local pastors and local churches have gotten behind this and are transforming villages. I mean, not only from the point of view of saving the kids, but bringing the village to Christ, which is obviously the ultimate goal. Mm-hmm. So it's been a tremendous ministry, and one that Orphan Relief and Rescue kind of stumbled upon just because there was a great need, and said, okay, what can we do about this? And so that's what's happening.
Sounds like terrific work. David, you ought to get your organization in touch with his. See if you have something in common for Malawi.
Well, I'm writing his down. We do much of the same one of the same things, or that's one of the focuses of our mission in Malawi as well. Is it to get to keep the girls in school and educate our grade school is supported, government supported in Malawi, but high school is not. And there's a lot of girls that are going to grade school, but as soon as they're out of grade school, the very real possibility is that they will be married off to some they will be sold as, or they will be not sold into marriage, but married off, and someone will give their parents money, a dowry, for the 11 or 12 year old, and they'll, and many times they'll never see the kid again. The girl will be taken away somewhere, or even if they're in the same neighborhood or left in the same neighborhood, they become a married woman at the age of the grand old age of 13. So one of the parts of the mission is that we pay for girls to go to boarding school. Now it's relatively more, or a lot more expensive than regular high school, but then they also have a place to stay. And right. the theory is that once they finish, boarding school, that they've got a leg up on education wise, that they can be self sufficient or more self sufficient. And yeah, we're starting out. I mean, it's still taking almost baby steps. And right now there are four girls from the mission, or from the grounds, or the area in Malawi that we support, that are in boarding school, and I think two of them graduated last year, but there's four in the class that are going on. So,
yeah, just astounding how much evil goes on in faraway places, out of sight and out of mind from folks mm-hmm. here. And it is great to hear that work like this is being done. And Don, you do good work, and you do good work here too. We need to talk about Lucy today. Now we've talked to. We talk about creation and science and faith and that kind of thing with Dr. Don. And there's an article in the Los Angeles Times that we ran across, and it's entitled, it's from Science Now. It's their science page, apparently, over at the LA Times. 3.2 million years after her death, it says, an autopsy reveals that Lucy probably died after falling from a tree. Well, okay. Tell us who Lucy is, first of all, Dr. Don.
Remember the reading the book when it first came out, and it was a fairly exciting book, as I remember. But mm-hmm. how he discovered Lucy and all the rest of it. Go ahead, Don. You tell it.
Well, yes. Don Johansson actually discovered Lucy. didn't really recover 100% skeleton of Lucy, but about 40% of the skeleton was complete, and brought it back and said, "Hey, look, I've found a pre-human, and this is the best link that we have today between." The apes and the human. Well, really, Lucy is about 3.5 feet tall, was classified as an adult, is pretty much made up of ape-like, features. So why are they calling this ape-like creature a humanoid? And it's the official name that they have given it is Australopithecus afarensis. And so Australopithecus is ape-like. And so this is supposed to be a link between the apes and man.
And by the way, these are not actual bones. These are fossilized bones, right? So they're entirely mineralized.
Yes, they're fossilized bones, mm-hmm. and we'll talk about the article in a minute, but this is just kind of background history.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Lucy, so you look at the skull of Lucy, and it's absolutely ape-like. As a matter of fact, it's the same size as a chimp. It looks like a chimp,
mm-hmm.
and you would say, that's probably a chimpanzee. It's the same size as a chimp. The fingers are long, and they're very long fingers, and they are curved to grab on the trees and to hang from trees and such like that, just like an ape's. I mean, just like a chimp's mm-hmm. are. The feet are apparently much the same. And so the features are very much ape-like and very much chimp-like. So why in the world would anyone, you know, call this find a humanoid? Well, in the same general location as they found Lucy, they found footprints, and the footprints are very much human footprints. So because they dated Lucy at 3.5 million years old, they said, well, you know, these can't possibly be human footprints, so they must have belonged to Lucy and her clan. And so they obviously had feet like humans, so we'll call them a human. You know, they're pre-humans, and they, you know, they stand upright, and obviously the footprints are up, you know, from a being that stood upright. And so because of that, they call this, you know, this find a humanoid, a pre-human type of creature. And everything about, you know, Lucy screams chimpanzee.
As I recall, there was another, because we discussed Lucy and how she came to our attention several months ago in an earlier interview with Dr. Don. And it seems to me the parts were actually collected from widely scattered locations, weren't they?
Well, they were, and kind of pieced together.
Yeah.
I think, as I recall, and it's been, as I said, several several months, if not last year sometime, that we were talking about this, that, you know, the skull was found, you know, was found in a cave, whereas other parts were found various other places. But they pieced Lucy together, and maybe most of the skeleton was... fossilized skeleton was found in one place, and then the skull was in a different place. But
these were locations like hundreds of yards apart, weren't they?
Yes, it wasn't like, oh, here's a skull right next to the skeleton. It's here's a skull in a different place from the remains of the other fossilized bones, if you will. So that should be, you know, in itself how. You know, how can you tell that, you know, this is, you know, even from the same skeleton? But they, you know, they pieced it together, and this was a tremendous find. And of course, it was highly publicized. And this was 40 years ago that, you know, this or more now that, you know, this discovery was made, and this is now in all the textbooks saying that this is a pre-humanoid, having her standing upright, even though she's got curved, you know, curved fingers, very much like, as I described, a chimpanzee. So here's part of the problem. The problem is that, you know, the dating of of this creature being 3.5 million years old, and of course, you know, we've talked about dating before, and she's probably, although I haven't really done the investigation on this, but probably is dated by the rock layers that she was found in, or you know, the area that she was found in is saying, oh, that's got to be about 3.5 million years ago. Now, you know, we know that, okay, she's probably might have been part of the flood catastrophe from the flood, or you know, post flood, and humans were probably around, and maybe even the humans, you know, ate monkeys for all we know, because there was a large collection of these individuals, Lucy-like individuals, or at least bones, in the same general area. So that's pretty much how this find, you know, was kind of put together. And it's you know, it's really interesting that they conclude, based on presumed age of the remains are, and these footprints, that hey, this has got to be a pre-humanoid, and here's our evidence for it. Now, it's interesting, this new study that was done, of course, since the bones are fossilized, they couldn't really, the instrumentation that one needed to look inside the bones, for example, which, you know, were pretty much rock, couldn't really do that until recent times. And so they used a high-resolution CT scanner, and they scanned the bones. And this scanner obviously had a higher resolution and could penetrate into the fossilized bones. And they pretty much scanned the whole skeleton, made a 3D model, and then began to investigate. Okay. There's some breaks here, evidence for breaks in the bones, and what does these breaks tell us? Well, the conclusion of the article is that hey, it looks like Lucy fell, and at least part of the reason why she died was that she fell from a great distance and probably a tree. And it's the fall that probably did her under, but she probably didn't, you know, wasn't killed immediately. But the injuries from the fall probably aided in her death. So rather than taking the obvious, well, if she fell from a tree and she has hands and possibly feet like a chimpanzee, maybe she is a chimpanzee and she actually, you know, fell from the environment that she is normally in.
Well, see, now that makes sense to me. Yeah.
Yes. But instead, they continue to say that this creature is humanoid, and she just happened to either, you know, was climbing a tree and slipped, and thereby, you know, caused her demise.
By the way, they've got I'm looking at the article now, and if anybody listening is interested in looking at the same article, there's now a link in our chat window at BrokenRoadRadio.com. You can click on that. When you do, there's an animation they've included in the story that simulates how Lucy may have died after falling from the tree, and in the drawing I'm looking at, it's a 6-foot white guy spread-eagled on the ground at the base of this tree. And then, and supposedly this is how Lucy... Well, it doesn't look like Lucy. So another subtle twisting of the evidence to indicate that this is humanoid, you know? By the way, Lucy named, the article goes on to say, and David, you will be interested in this because you brought up Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. That's how Lucy got her name.
Right.
Because the song was playing over and over, it says, at their camp the night that she was found, hence the name Lucy. So,
well, the other thing that I remember now, too, is that they found her in so many pieces scattered around in an area.
Mm-hmm. Now, SAS comments that they were found as far as 200 miles apart. I don't know whether he's kidding or whether he's literal, but it wouldn't surprise me a bit.
That I don't remember that. But I remember that they found a number of, and they found a number of other of individuals that Johansson, when he discovered or made this discovery, and he was working on something else and saw it out of the corner of his eye, recognized it as what's called a homonym,
or hominid,
human. Yeah. Human-like, mm-hmm. And then went to look, and they found a number of individuals in that particular area, I don't remember exactly how large the number was. I'm thinking 15 or 16, and so they decided that this would probably be a new species, and that's where the term afarensis comes from.
Yeah.
And that's the part of the name that's the species. Mm-hmm. The remains also has, and I've not seen, or I don't have the book in front of me, but I remember him talking about, and it's in the Wikipedia page as well, that the pelvis area was more erect or more her face forward, suggesting that if she just stood up straight, then she'd be able to walk just like humans.
And that's suggested in this article too. But then if you figure that these parts were assembled from across, if not hundreds of thousands of yards apart, maybe as far as 200 miles apart.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she could be a collection of critters.
Yeah, and I'm curious how they matched pieces that put that finally resulted in at least 40% of the one particular individual.
Don, could they look at a bunch of fossils and just assume that they go together? Would all fossils, now again, this is mineralized bone, not bone itself. So is the color the same, the texture the same? Or, you know, can they tell that these pieces go together other than just the shape?
Well, that's an interesting question. It would be like putting the puzzle pieces together and saying, oh, okay, this piece looks like it goes here and this piece looks like it goes there. I'm sure there was the different pieces were fractured just due to natural causes. So possibly they could say, oh, okay, this piece looks like it goes with this. You wouldn't think that they would be able to do that from a great distance, if they're in the same general location, okay.
What makes them assume this was one creature, I guess, is the basic question here.
Not a conglomerate of, okay, this is this species that we just happened to find. Mm-hmm. Okay, here's a femur from, maybe another individual, and we're going to put it together because it obviously belongs to this a similar creature like this. Mm-hmm. If that was the case, then you couldn't say anything about how Lucy died. So they must have some confidence in saying at least that portion of her skeletal structure that was investigated actually belonged together and actually kind of indicated that she fell from a high distance therefore produced the fractures, the microfractures in the bones that that they could investigate with the CT scan.
I'm getting vague memories now of undergraduate anthropology, which is my length of expertise in this whole area. But I seem to remember an instructor telling me that none of this matching is done on site. That they find a piece. They lock it in. They measure it. They take a picture. They give it locations and grids, and they draw a big picture. And they, this was found exactly at this grid. And they give it longitude and latitude numbers down to the fourth decimal place. And then they put it in this big box. And then the box is shipped back to the lab, and the undergraduates. And the guys that are working for their master's degree work on it for the next 50 years. And, I mean, they're the ones that after, computer analysis of this piece and this piece suggest, hey, maybe these pieces fit together. Let's give it a try. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So rather than look around at the ground and say, oh, let's put this puzzle piece over here next to this one. I mean, that they don't do that. I was just looking at the same kind of process in identification of skeletal remains in mass graves. And that same kind of thing probably takes place. They don't try to fit them together on the site in the muck and the mire and the dust. They take it back to the lab where it's air-conditioned and more comfortable.
Mm. Yep. No, that makes sense. You've seen movies where, they're doing this type of investigation, and that's exactly what they're doing, is trying to piece everything together.
And you can understand how they might reach some of these conclusions that it's something other than a chimp, because, I mean, that doesn't get attention at all. That doesn't get research grants. That doesn't get university tenure. That doesn't get all the prizes and the plaudits that scientists seek in finding something meaningful and earth-shaking. If they just said, oh, it's a bird, it's a plane. Oh, no, it's just a chimp. And that would fall on his face, so to speak, right there.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe it was a certain type of chimp that, you know, is unusual, perhaps. I don't know. but still, you know, you come down to, if your assumptions are wrong, then oftentimes you're going to, you know, and you are presupposing something. In this case, that, oh, evolution actually takes place, and it takes place over a long period of time, and there were no humans, you know, living at that time, because we know when the human race started and all this other stuff. So you come to the wrong conclusion.
Well, you tend to filter out evidence. You ignore certain evidence that doesn't fit with your preconceived notion.
Right. In this case... you know, maybe the evidence was, hey, there was a group of humans living together, and they actually hunted monkeys, which we know people do today, and they were using the chimps as a source of food, and that's why there's a whole, you know, pile of chimp bones in this area, for example, and that's probably why they were taken apart. Either that, or hey, this is the bones got all jumbled up during a flood event or post flood event, and that's why they're all scattered about. By the fact that they're fossilized, you know, tells me that okay, one, they had to be submerged in water at some point in time, and that water had to have a lot of minerals in it, and it was probably, if they found them in any type of rock layer whatsoever, then it probably was from a flood or a post-flood, you know, event. And if you ignore written history, for example, then you can easily come to the wrong conclusions, especially if you have preconceived notions as to what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. And of course, without seeing these things, we're kind of going on a limb. Again, so to speak, here in making certain assumptions. But if there's a fossilized bone, how much detail can the fossilized bone tell you about the actual bone that was once there? If, for example, if that bone was fractured, a major fracture, I suppose it would show up in the fossil. But a hairline fracture, maybe not. And any evidence, it would be easily misinterpreted as a fracture. It could be just a line caused by, who knows, a passing leaf in the breeze as it was solidifying. So you tend to reach for conclusions that, again, fit the preconception, and I think that's what's happened with Lucy. Interesting article today, and it's, there's a link to it on our page at brokenroadradio.com in the chat window. You click on that, it'll take you to this. You can actually play the little animation and analyze this for yourself, do your own thinking. And while you're jumping around the Internet, you might want to pay a visit to creationmoments.com. Creation Moments is a website that really specializes in the science that supports young Earth creationism, and it's taking a lot of heat right now. But unless you actually look at the science that supports it, you're not a fair judge of this thing. And there are wackos on both sides of the argument. Creation Moments is not one of them. Mm-hmm. Very rational presentation of the evidence that there is that supports young Earth creationism, not the least of which, of course, is the book of Genesis. And that's an awfully good starting point for your own personal examination of our origins. How did we come to be? Well, we get a big head start when you read the book of Genesis. And Dr. Don, a member of the board of Creation Moments, and just back from Seattle, and he's explained some of his. Well, give us the name of that organization again. And can people find that on the web?
Absolutely. Your orphan group? It's Orphan Relief and Rescue, mm-hmm. And of course the website is orphanreliefandrescue.org. If they go to the website, they can find the organization. They can learn more about what Orphan Relief and Rescue does, and donations would be greatly appreciated in order to continue the work.
Well, so we are very, very good.
We're looking to help rescue more children, and we can't do that without having the funds to do it.
Important. David, any last thoughts about Lucy here before we depart?
No, not really. I mean, it was an interesting book, as I remember, written back in the I think it was the mid-70s, mm-hmm. and maybe early 80s could have been. Is like, I think the discovery was made in 1974.
Yep,
that was the but I don't read that many scientific knowledge books and stuff in it, but that one made an impact on me.
Well, that's why we get to talk to Dr. Don now, because that stuff's important and it's interesting, and you understand the appetite, the goal of finding the first human beings and solving the mystery when... But it's odd that we got such a head start in the book of Genesis, and they just tend to ignore that. Let's not consider that, because we don't understand that. I'm not sure what the rationale is there. Dr. Don, have a good week, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday, okay?
Well, thank you very much, and you folks do the same.
I'll do that.
See you, Don.
So long.